Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. I'm Nikki Robertson, and my guests today are Janine Townsend and Kyle Bloch, who recently presented their research at the International Congress of Psychology in Prague earlier this year on virtual reality in psychotherapy. Janine and Kyle, welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. You recently presented your research at the International Congress of Psychology in Prague this year on virtual reality and psychotherapy. And most of us are quite familiar with virtual reality in the context of gaming and entertainment. But when you really think about it, it makes complete sense to use this kind of technology in a therapeutic setting. Where did this all come about for you?
Yes, I think in the beginning, it was all about how do we provide preventative measures for anyone who's going through any form of suffering, and how do we provide more immediate on-demand therapy for someone. Particularly for me, it came up during my internship year all the way back 10 years where I had an individual come to me. He was in tears in front of me, and as an industrial psychologist, my job is to kind of just make sure that the person can leave and feel a little bit of a mood increase and have just small things to be able to do to help ameliorate those or alleviate those issues they're going through. And then I kind of had to refer on to PASA system, and it kept on coming back to me is how can we immediately provide some form of proactive treatment or proactive any form of alleviating suffering that is available there and then, and they don't even have to come to me, and they could immediately engage and pick up something that's really helpful.
So there's a couple of questions here, but firstly, how did using virtual reality in therapy come about? Is this a new thing? Has it been brewing in the background for decades? Like most things, it's like it takes time to break into sort of conscious awareness. Where did this really originate?
So this is actually not new technology. I think the first virtual reality therapy program was developed in the early 1990s. So it's been used since then. And it's shown efficacy even with the reduced quality of the graphics of that time. And it started off as, I believe, a researcher who wanted to treat people who had fear of heights. And then it progressively started getting used for veterans, for war veterans, to treat PTSD.
From my understanding, there's parts of the brain that come into activation when we experience memories that trigger trauma. There's parts of the brain that activate when we're anxious, so the hippocampus, the amygdala. Does working with a therapist using virtual reality tools short circuit this part of the brain, or does it override sort of that part of the brain that is overactivated? How does the technology actually work?
Yeah, and my understanding of it is that it doesn't override anything, but it offers a safe space for you to re-experience certain things. So it gives your brain is sort of tricked into believing that it is actually re-experiencing that environment, even though it's not necessarily the best graphics or the most realistic environment. From a visual perspective, your brain, because it's seeing it, interprets it as this is my reality. And then that, in a therapeutic setting, assists in giving the therapist the opportunity to experience, to help you re-experience these difficult emotions and difficult traumas, sort of being in the room with you in a safe environment.
Yeah, so essentially what's often used in VR is what they term mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy, a very, very long mouthful for saying essentially is combining a type of therapy in cognitive behavioral thinking about how can we possibly adjust our perception of our thoughts and emotions. On the other side, involving this mindfulness-based, which you'll find in a lot of modules, which is essentially just coming back to how do we stay in the present moment. What's nice about the VR is it adds that additional sense of the visual sense. And a lot of people then, I mean, when we invite people to meditate, we often ask them to close their eyes. And it can be a bit scary for some people to do that, and you can get more in your head from closing your eyes. Whereas in VR, you have this immersive environment, you have the visuals, and it adds that sense to allow you to actually pay more attention
Yeah,
to the present moment.
exactly. Like another dimension, just to make it more physical.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I remember a couple of years ago, my brother got a VR headset, quite a sophisticated one, and he had a game where you go onto the top of a building. And I hate heights. I cannot handle height. I can't even go to Ferris wheel. And this was one of those. And I could barely breathe. It was so triggering. And I mean, they were just walking around me in the kitchen, and I just completely freaked out. So, how does it work in a therapy? Obviously, you would need a therapist with you, and you need to sort of almost brief your patient before you do the therapy. So, how does the therapeutic setting play out, and how do you know whether somebody is a good candidate for this or not?
That's a good question. So there are two different ways in which VR is currently using being used in a therapeutic sense. The one is where you don't need a therapist with you. So that's more for things that's not treating anything, but perhaps teaching you a skill. So there, it's basically just up to whether you have any previous knowledge of how to access this kind of technology. Do you have the headset? Things like that. And then you have a different, you have the additional therapeutic setting, which is where when you are treating anything like depression, PTSD, eating disorders, specific phobias, and things like that, it's really important to then have someone who is a skilled therapist with you in the room. And as you mentioned, to be able to brief them properly on what they could potentially expect from this environment so that they know what they're heading into as best they can. And also to know that they can get off the ride at any point. So this is something that you can stop if it becomes too overwhelming.
Thanks.
And ideally to also then give them certain tools of coping mechanisms. So when so, and this virtual environment then becomes the space in which you are able to enact these coping mechanisms of stress relief and emotion regulation. So yes, then you are prepared by your therapist prior to going into this setting. And then depending on the level of attention that you need, they might talk you through certain aspects of this therapy. One of the modules that we made use of in our research allowed the therapist to then view exactly what the client sees while they're in this immersive experience. So it's sort of like a gentle hand-holding. And then you're able to kind of track what your client is busy experiencing. And then thereafter, what's really important, and I think where most of the value of this lies, is the opportunity to then debrief with your therapist thereafter to make meaning of the situation and see how did you handle the situation and how could you potentially improve for future sessions.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I can really understand how that would work, say if you're working with a phobia, because sort of immersion or being in a experiencing a phobia and knowing there's a part of you that knows it's not real, but you still, all of your senses are still reacting as if it's real. It makes complete sense to have exposure therapy. But how would it work, say, in when you're looking at trauma where memories are suppressed and people can't access those feelings? What intervention would you use in a VR setting to gently sort of bring those memories to the surface so that they can be worked with?
My instinct on that is that a therapist would first do a lot of work prior to exposure. So they would do trauma-informed therapy with the client, with the patient, to make sure that they are in a space where they would be able to handle a situation of being reintroduced to a space that resembles where trauma took place. So it would never be a case of the person comes to your therapy rooms and it's the intake session and you're like, okay, let's explore this trauma immediately. It will be gradual.
I think what's important here, Nikki, is to note that, and I think Janine raised a really good point, is it's always a blended approach, whereby it's the therapist helping facilitate around using the VR as a tool, as opposed to be the primary function of driving the therapy.
And what about using this technology with kids? I mean, I'm sure kids would be so adept to this kind of, it's novel, it's fun, it's in that realm. I'm sure this must be really, really useful. I don't know if it's been used with children before, but I can imagine it must be such a nice way to access children and what they're going through in a sort of a safe, familiar space.
So I'm not too familiar with all the research on it, except that I know that it's being quite successfully used in helping children to learn emotion regulation. So to teach them how to meditate without it being called meditation, and in that way, teaching them how to regulate their emotions in a sort of a fun, visual environment.
And I think that's the big thing, Janine, is the fun part is we have seen modules out there where and it was actually a project done for kids who are fighting cancer, and they kind of were put in a simulation whereby they were taught in a fun way that they are fighting a fight, and there was a simulation of a karate guy, and they would engender various different types of really ways to emotionally regulate, but in the image of being a karate kid and having a master in front in a dojo. So it really makes actually learning emotional regulation a fun and more digestible kind of content.
Yeah, and I should think it would give somebody, kids definitely, but even adults, a sense of autonomy over what they're going through, just putting them in that position. And there's a level of believability because you're in it. It must be true, which is hugely resourceful when you're dealing with something like cancer or even pain. I saw that, in the research, there was quite a bit done with people who had been burnt, and immersing them in a cold bath and then putting them in a virtual reality environment where there was ice relieved their pain up to 80%. And that is, just testimony to the power of the brain that we can make our own painkillers if we're prompted well enough. What are your thoughts around the future of that kind of technology?
Well, I think that's exactly where this kind of thing is headed. At the moment, I know that they are combining virtual reality also with artificial intelligence. So there's going to come a point where you'd be able to customize your environment to suit your needs.
Wow.
So, for instance, if you're the kind of person who finds peace and solace on a mountain, you could type in the exact kind of landscape that you would like to, for instance, go do your meditation in or something like that. So I think technology is definitely heading in that direction, and especially with neuroscience playing such a prominent role in how we understand mental health these days, I think it's just a matter of time before this technology heads into the realm of almost like a science fiction novel. It's already basically there.
Has anyone done this on psychedelics yet? Because it must be quite a trip.
Actually, now that you mention it, they've recently created a study where they are pairing psychedelic assisted therapy with virtual reality. So they're tailoring the environment to the needs of the person who is undergoing this psychedelic experience. So yeah, it adds to the set and setting. That's also quite disorientating because
Yeah,
psychedelics
if I
are.
had to comment on that, I'm not too sure I would want a headset wrapped around my face on psychedelics.
Exactly. So you were invited to come and present at this Congress in Prague in June. And can you take us through what your studies or your research culminated in that you presented at this Congress?
Oh yes, it was actually really interesting. So we took the work that Kyle and Dr. Anthony Townsend did on developing this module on anxiety management, and we then added additional modules to it from a company called Sias. I think they now called something else like XR Health or something like that. And we selected a bunch of modules, 4 modules in total, to take participants through. So they each completed one virtual reality module each week. And then what we did was to test their levels of anxiety prior to actually undergoing the virtual setting, and then also afterwards. And what was quite remarkable is that not only did their levels of anxiety subside quite substantially from one session to the next. Also, it subsided from the beginning of the session to the end of the session. So, although it wasn't a representative sample and this was purely exploratory research, it gave us really good indication of some of the applications locally that this kind of virtual reality therapy could be used for. And I think so it also slots in with what Kyle was mentioning about the potential application of just having a virtual reality environment available in an organizational setting.
So let's chat about that. Well, actually, let's step back before we go into that organizational setting, because the thing that really stood out for me when I went through your presentation was creating this kind of therapy and making it accessible to people who either can't afford or don't have access to traditional therapy. And with the dramatic increase in a mental, I don't know if it's an increase, but we're just becoming more aware of the fact that people are really suffering with mental health. I think they always have been, but it's really just become something we are so gravely aware of, especially since COVID and since this dissociation for or lack of social and family support. And there are so many people who are desperately in need, but maybe live too far away from a city where they don't get access to good quality mental health care. How do you see this playing out in the future from an accessibility point of view? And how will it become easier for people to manage their mental state using this technology?
So, I mean, I just have a few stats just to echo those that sentiment, not even the sentiment, the facts on the ground, Nikki, is so South African Depression and Anxiety Group reports 75% of South Africans are suffering from some mental issues or struggles. Then access, so it looks like 0.31 psychiatrists and 0.32 psychologists for per 100,000 people in South Africa. And according to the World Health Organization, that's extremely low, so it should be a lot higher than that. And then over 77% of South Africans report, according to Deloitte, that they are suffering from some burnout or they are suffering from stress. And then we don't even, I'm sure everyone's aware of the poverty stats in South Africa, over 50% and unemployment rates. So as you say, these are real facts on the ground that we really have to address. And I do believe that VR holds a huge promise. I'm not going to say it's going to solve the whole problem for us, but just from accessibility perspective, just from the idea that all one needs is the headset loaded up, knows how to use the headset, and then has some form of blended approach and does have some form of touch points with a counselor, maybe even a religious leader or someone who could assist them. So I think there's a lot of promise for it, and it's also very cost effective because once a module's developed, it's there, it's standalone. It doesn't use, let's say, for instance, the therapist's actual time. It will only take the duration of how long the module takes.
And it is going to, I mean, practically, if you don't need a therapist, you could train a social worker, it could create job opportunities for people who are in sort of the healthcare field to facilitate or just hold space for somebody as they're using the technology. They don't necessarily has to be a psychotherapist. So I think, obviously living in this country where there's such a need, I mean, there's need everywhere, but we have a specific need. I think, what are your thoughts around how we can get this technology out to where it's needed most? Is it going to take funding? Does it just simply need to have awareness and, bring it into awareness of the people who can make this happen? How do you see it
So
happening?
I think it's definitely also a consideration of infrastructure because there are many underserviced areas in our country who don't have access to basic things like electricity, let alone like then having to worry about a VR headset. But it would also take, I think, education on how to use certain technologies because it is quite foreign. I saw that when we conducted this research, even people who are quite tech savvy, it took a little bit of getting used to for them. And then definitely some funding because you need to be able to build the modules that are culturally relevant to our context and that potentially also considers the different language barriers that we're working with.
I think also, sorry, just to add on to that, Nikki, When we were doing this study, we used obviously one of the more advanced headsets made by Meta, which were Facebook bought them, or rather, Facebook bought the company and the Meta took over. It's called Oculus. But if you go and take a look now, or if you go on any Google thing, you can actually find a kind of VR headset made out of a box with two lenses, and you can just shift your phone in it. And I think there's so much opportunity to just load these up on someone's phone, on an app. There's a lot, I don't know the stats, so don't quote me, but I feel like there's a lot more access
Certainly.
to phones that can get around, and just uploading the app to that, and then kind of immersive, putting just a box that's made of a few lenses is maybe the first step, at least, to get to the point of making it accessible to the population around South Africa.
That's so exciting, and it makes all kinds of sense because almost every single person in this country has access to a smartphone, of varying levels, but still, it's still a smartphone. And I mean, there should be some kind of corporate social responsibility attached to this. And maybe we can, maybe this podcast will land in the right ears, I'm hoping. So, just to go into the corporate side of things, what are the interventions? What are your thoughts around how this could be used in a corporate environment to add to an existing EAP program or existing corporate health program? Where do you see it going in that context?
So I'm going to approach that from understanding what are the failures currently with wellness in the corporate space. And I think you'll see a lot. There's a lot of employee wellness programs, employee assistance programs. There's also the requirement to have these programs. But I often feel like at least in my 10 or so years in the corporate space, it's more of a tick box exercise than anything.
Absolutely.
And when you do have the introduction of these employee wellness programs, the uptake is really low. For whatever reasons. I mean, I've got my own thoughts about that. One of the primary one being confidentiality and a stigma of approaching a manager saying you're suffering through depression or burnout. But at the end of the day, the result is the same, that the uptake is low and the actual benefits aren't being used. So, where I feel VR can come in is you now have something where you don't need to approach a manager or tell anyone that you're going through anything. It's a standalone kind of resource that is available at any given time on demand. And you can kind of pick it up and then take yourself through any type of experience through what you're going through. And you can kind of customize it yourself with, again, no one knowing what you're going through, no one knowing what you're opting into. In the comfort of, let's say, a room where you can just put the VR headset in and go through a said experience to help whatever suffering you're going through. So I do hope to see more of uptake in the corporate space. Again, it would need to come with some blended approach where HR managers, where other psychologists or counselors or are facilitating the use of the therapy.
Or at the very least, being available to debrief should anything come up during something like that. I just wanted to mention that some of our research actually took place in a corporate environment, and I had the chance to see how people were using this in this space. And some of the people who signed up for this research, they did so not knowing that they were going to be in amidst like a lot of workplace stress at the time. And so some of the feedback that we got was, I am so incredibly stressed right now prior to starting the module. And then thereafter, because we introduced anxiety regulation techniques and mindfulness-based techniques, it was something that they were not only able to use in a day-to-day, in their day-to-day, without the VR headset being present. But just from going through that experience in that session where I did minimal facilitation, they explained to me that they felt like, okay, I can get through this day now. So I think it's really powerful. Something as simple as a 7-minute intervention could have that kind of impact.
That's quick. That's quick. And logically, that's all it takes. But I think, perhaps, and you can correct me if I'm off track here, but it's one thing going and meditating and having to get your head in a space, which takes a good 10 minutes just to get started. But when you've got that other dimension of the visual, it almost feels like it would be within 30 seconds you could get into that space, especially if you're consciously breathing, according to a pattern. It would, I mean, a 7 minute therapy session is insane. I think that's amazing, especially in a high pressure environment where people perceive that they don't have time.
Yeah, exactly. And some people were saying that they felt like, wow, they didn't realize that for 7 minutes they could feel like they took a little bit of a trip somewhere else. They were
Wow.
completely displaced from the hustle and bustle of the office environment. And then an
Incredible.
additional benefit of it is, I think you touched on it, is some people struggle during normal meditation to visualize.
Yes.
Everyone has strong mental imagery. And what this kind of VR meditation mindfulness space creates for someone is it gives a visual to what you're supposed to be connecting to in your own body by being able to see an avatar, for instance, going through progressive muscle relaxation activity. And in that way, you can attach to the exercise a lot more viscerally.
So, how have therapists taken to this new, well, not new, but this technology? What is, have you, I mean, you presented at a conference. What was the, how was it received?
It was quite well received. We actually had quite a massive section of CBT informed therapists who were exploring virtual reality therapy as an additional modality that they could use to enhance their existing practices. It was actually quite a large number of researchers who were looking into the different ways that they could incorporate this, not knowing necessarily that a lot of these modules ex already exist, but not necessarily in the languages that they wanted to. So
Yeah.
I met researchers from across Africa and from Spain and Mexico, and they were saying that while this technology exists, it would be incredibly valuable if it could be translated in a way that's a little bit closer to home for their populations as well. So people are wanting to use this in an international space, but the difficulty is that accessibility,
Right.
sometimes the cost involved with creating bespoke kind of environments. The training, I mean, it's not necess you don't
Sure.
necessarily have to be a specialist in virtual reality therapy in order to make use of it, but it's still relatively new for certain contexts. And then there are some concerns around patient data. So there are certain modules that already exist, like one of the ones that we used in our research, where you put in the name of the client. And then you sort of track their experience based on their subjective rating of their levels of anxiety and things like that.
And what are the barriers to getting this going in South Africa? Are there any barriers, or is it all, are you already using virtual reality in a therapeutic setting?
So, the barriers, I think, is just that not a lot of people know about it. I think more in the tech space, people are aware of it. They're using it in their business environment more than in therapeutic settings. I personally don't know of, and Carl, you can also let me know what, because you're a little bit more, you've got your finger on the pulse there, but I don't know of any psychologists or therapists who are currently using this in South Africa. It'll be interesting to see the response to this discussion. But I do know that Dr. Townsend does offer it as an option.
Who's just the thought that came to mind, who is not a good candidate for this kind of therapy?
So it'll be someone who has very little, who has difficulty with reality contact, although they are now doing research with people who do suffer from schizophrenia and auditory and visual hallucinations,
Right.
and using this kind of research to assist them, the more high functioning population, to distinguish between auditory hallucinations and visual hallucinations and reality. So, but they won't be an ideal candidate if you're not specifically treating them for that. And then also people who struggle with epilepsy and motion sickness, although that's the motion sickness component is more just that's something that you can control. So exposure therapy in typical clinical settings would be, for instance, if you have a fear of heights, if you have a fear of anything, basically. And there are multiple modules in different organizations that have created virtual reality modules to kind of account for basically anything that you could be afraid of and want to overcome. So whether it's spiders, whether it's heights, whether it's there was even one that they said is quite common, people who are afraid of being exposed to someone who is vomiting in front of them. So, and there's another interesting one, so for agoraphobia, so people who are afraid of public spaces, fear of flying, that's one of the most common things that this is being used for. And what's amazing about this kind of environment is that the modules are typically designed in such a way that you're not exposed to the experience in full blast. The therapist has the ability to kind of gradually introduce you to various settings and to create sort of that narrative for you while you're busy developing your coping skills to slowly but surely something that you're comfortable with.
I think a really awesome module on that one that I saw was linking to actually fear of giving presentations, which I mean, and speaking in public, which I mean, a lot of people suffer from. And the nice thing is, as Janine said, where the facilitator can control what's happening, so they can increase the intensity throughout. And what's quite fun to see is you start by pitching to a board, you're in a boardroom, and there's these big members. And the facilitator can add another member, add a distraction. And again, it's according to the intensity what the person can handle, which is the nice thing. And then it introduces kind of various coping mechanisms. So it kind of pauses, introduces the coping mechanism. So then when you translate this across to reality, one understands exactly how to then approach that situation and deal with it in a far more effective way.
It's like rehearsing something, and your brain really doesn't know whether it's imagination or reality. It's just going to calm down over time with enough practice, which is super clever. What a great tool to use, not just for trauma, or for PTSD or depression, but something that's really the applications practically in the world are enormous, and for many people.
Yeah, and that's a key point because your brain fills in the blanks. It just needs to be real enough,
Believable.
the immersive the environment. But as you say, the consequences aren't that great because again, what are the consequences of you just messing up on a computer program? And that's where it creates the environment when, as you say, you can go through simulations, practice, and get better, and reduce, and there's a reduction in the phobia overall.
No, what a great tool to give people freedom to live their lives. I think that's so valuable. And we always look at where do you go with the trauma? How do you deal with the big issues? But sometimes fear of flying is a big enough issue, and it does impact on a person's quality of life, especially if they have to do it for work, and to take that fear away because, oh, people really suffer. I mean, but we don't think of it in that, like that seriousness of somebody who's almost suicidal because they're going through stuff. So yeah, I think the future is looking very bright when it comes to these kind of technologies, and where we can use tech to improve lives. What a win. I think it's wonderful, and I wish you all the sort of the luck with your endeavor bringing this into public awareness, and I hope it goes from strength to strength.